Hello and welcome to the Ambulance Science Podcast. I'm Scott Phelps, and this week, like usual, I'm with my partner in crime, Maria Werner. And what we're going to talk about today is body cameras for EMS. And the reason why I want to talk about body cameras is because, like many of you, I've been watching the Chavin trial. Did I pronounce that right? Chavin, is that his name? Yeah. And I thought it really interesting that if you watch the testimony of the paramedics, they're doing the testimony and they're cutting in and out of using the video, the body camera footage from the police officers to actually illustrate sort of what happened with the patient's care. And so I had thought in the past a bunch about body cameras for EMS. I'm generally of the opinion it's a good idea. And I think that as time goes by, I realize I'm thinking it's more and more necessary. Maria, what do you think? She just gave me a big eye. You guys can't see this. She just gave me this like big eye look like,
So I think it's another tool that we have. And documentation has become, for lack of a better word, such a pain in the rear end, especially with everything being electronic. But it is definitely more thorough in some ways than our paper. You know, I remember shortening and trying to paraphrase what I did to write it and fit it in a PCR, on a piece of paper, not wanting to use a continuation form and, you know, using the continuation form and I'm writing too much. So I think that sometimes the body cameras might be nice if you don't really remember and you can go back and be like, all right, what do we do? I think it would be really nice for documentation, but I think also for the sake of the patients and being able to have evidence for or against something on something that occurred. For example, if there was an accident while you were in the ambulance, things like that. I think that it has a lot of value if it's used in the right context.
So where this came up originally in my head was, well, when I was state EMS director, blah, blah, blah. But the reason it came up for a number of reasons. One is that over the time I was state EMS director, it became more and more common for us, whenever we were doing an investigation, we would ask for the police officer's body camera footage. And that almost always existed because almost all police officers, at least in New Jersey, have body cameras. And so that could actually help us establish whether especially since so much of what's done at EMS is done either inside the house or done inside the back of the ambulance, that it really does become a he said, she said issue for complaints about bad behavior. Whereas the police officers who are almost always with the patient, with the paramedic crew, were able to provide that. And that provides, sometimes it convicted them. And sometimes, your jaw dropped when you saw some of the footage. And sometimes it would absolve them. But the nice part is that it gives you a lot more ability to understand what actually went on besides you just trying to explain yourself. So
police body.
Go ahead.
Sorry. It gave way to some great reality shows as well.
It did, although cops didn't really rely on body cameras for the most part. But one of the things we found was that, you know, there's really cameras everywhere. So on street corners, there's traffic cameras inside every, not every store, but most stores, most hospitals have cameras in their waiting room, in their emergency rooms, and throughout in their hallways. So no matter really where you are these days, you're on camera. And that's sort of so the first reason for body cameras, I think, being important is that there's literally cameras all around you. And there's cameras, drive cams, and people have cameras in their own cars. I have a camera in my car that shoots both forward and back into the cabin in real time in my personal car, let alone in the ambulances I work in. They also have cameras going forwards at all times. You've got cameras on the streets. You've got cameras in businesses. You've got people obviously filming pretty much everything you do in public. And so if we're going to have cameras everywhere, I want a camera that is showing my point of view and showing the stuff that I can control. And I'm not saying I want to change the perception of the scene. I'm saying that I want something that can will be taken from my point of view, so it can give a better understanding of sort of what I'm doing. So that's reason number one, because I want to have a copy too. I don't want to have to rely on trying to find that bystander or that police officer, or relying on the audio off of the AED. But we're being recorded at pretty much every moment of our working, if not personal lives right now. And so it's helpful for us to have that too.
Would you say it would be like taking a walk in your shoes, Scott?
Somehow visually. I feel like you're setting me up there for something. So I'm going to just,
It's a visual to actually take it from the paramedic's perspective or the EMT's perspective.
So yeah. Since I'm old, since I wear Rockports, I do not wear work boots or anything like that. I wear Rockports at work. I have very comfortable shoes so you could take a walk in. So that's the first reason. The second reason is that it gives us a really, really incredible opportunity for quality assurance. Where we're able to actually, when there's a difficult procedure or an unusual procedure in an agency, it gives the agency the ability to say, look, Bob and Joe did a cricothyrotomy the other day, surgical cricothyrotomy. It doesn't happen very often, but what we're going to do is we're going to go over the chart and go over the video step by step so they could show you what went well, what didn't go well. And so, you know, you're a lot more likely to learn from the video of Bob and Joe than you are from seeing a video of a physician doing it in an emergency room. So it gives us a lot of opportunities for education, for quality control. And, you know, most places are pretty dogmatic about not using any sort of video footage for disciplinary reasons for the most part, because if they did, somehow all those cameras would probably have a tendency to break. So anybody I've known who has had the drive monitors in their vehicles, has had cameras in their vehicles, most of their systems don't use it for bad things. They use it for quality assurance and they use it for being able to defend people.
The third reason. I could definitely see the benefit for education as well, because it's like having a live case study. You know, it's different than just having to read it.
Well, depending on the type of camera you have, because I've thought about doing this as well. There's also for new people, you can't always, you know, a supervisor or a field training officer can't always be with a new person or a person who whatever. Let's say a new person. But what you could do is you could have a real-time video link with them having a real-time audio link with a Bluetooth wireless headset in their ear. So if you let's just say if you took your iPhone and you put the camera on and you had it attached to your chest and you had a Bluetooth headphone on, you could actually have a supervisor overseeing 5 or 6 new medics in real time, with real-time feedback right into their ear. And I'm just surprised nobody's done that yet in any sort of real world fashion, because especially for larger systems, the ability for you to just be able to drop in, have the physician medical director or the clinical coordinator to be able to drop in and listen to a call and see a call in real time, that's pretty valuable as a quality improvement tool. You can have real-time monitoring without having to actually physically be there all the time. That's scarier. But at the same time, for something complicated, I would, you know, if I was on a job and I had to do a surgical cricothyrotomy. Now, listen, I just didn't do it on a real person. I did it on a cadaver the other day. But, you know, I've been a paramedic for almost 35 years, and I don't think I've ever done a surgical or needle crook thyrotomy. Needle crook thyrotomies don't work at all because I've never seen a system that had a trans-laryngeal jet insufflator at 50 PSI. So we just use surgical crook thyrotomies like reasonable people. But I haven't really ever done one in a real setting. I've done one on mannequins and pig tracheas and on cadavers, but if I really had to do it, I'd be kind of, you know, anxious. So a little bit of help is great. You know, with the cadaver, I just, you know, my student, one of my medic students did it under supervision, but this cadaver actually had another internal membrane on the inside of their trachea. So they had cut through the skin, separated. They had cut through the cricoid cartilage, and then they couldn't see the trachea. They couldn't see the space because there was another membrane inside. Now, I think that's because it was a cadaver, and maybe the cadaver had the inside skin separate from the wall there at some point because they had been intubating her. But it was we were all like, what the hell's going on? And so once we cut through that membrane did we actually get into the trachea. But you could see there are an endless series of things that you could probably use help with, especially things that are uncommon and unusual. And real-time video with real-time audio guidance would be a huge benefit. Now, listen, I come from New Jersey. So New Jersey, we're used to talking to the physician on every call. So we're used to talking to the physician. So for us, it wouldn't be seen as a big deal at all. I know in other states, they almost never talk to physicians. Like in Pennsylvania, they almost never talk to physicians. In New Jersey, we talk to them on every call. So for us, it's not a real, there's no cognitive barrier to it. It's just a matter of being able to set up that system. It doesn't seem like it'd be hard either, but it'd be useful. So that's three of the things. What do you think of all this? Am I selling you on this?
I'm pretty pro on the cameras, personally speaking, because I think that the benefits outweigh the risks or the criticisms or the cons, you know.
What other ideas can you come up with? The other benefit, you mentioned it before, this is the fourth benefit, is, and this, I actually, there's a physician in Minneapolis who wrote an article about the use of body cameras. And I actually called him up maybe 2 years ago and asked him this question, because one of the things that's really interesting to me is that the one place where you can actually improve efficiency in EMS is by shortening cycle time. But the only place you can really shorten cycle time is in the charting and getting back in service section. So I wanted to know sort of what would happen if we just document the entire case on video and then either have it transcribed later on, or not even have it transcribed at all, just have literally like a cheat card to make sure we hit all the things we have to capture: name, age, date of birth, social security, medical history, blah, 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 blah. Talk it through on the video while we do it, and then you just turn the video over to the hospital as the patient's chart. And that way it can be reviewed. That way the physician can actually see the patient when you saw them. I had a patient, oh God, maybe about a month ago, who had what seemed like a new onset stroke /TIA. He had complete left-sided hemiparesis. But then by the time we got to the ED, he was regaining muscle tone in his left side. And all I kept thinking was, damn it, I know this attending isn't going to believe me. Damn it, he's not going to see it. So he's not going to believe the guy was completely flaccid. So, but if we had it on video, then the entire call would be documented. So we could shorten our cycle time by 5 or 10 minutes. And that has real and concrete savings attached to it. And that would more than pay for the entire system.
Sometimes I think it feels better, like if you can kind of show your side of the story too, like how many times have we walked in and asked a patient a question, they deny something, then they get there and they have a totally different story, you know?
Yeah, and you'd be like, wait, look, here's the video. Here's yeah. how they answered this question last time.
Yeah, I mean, and there's something to be said for that, right? Like, because sometimes those things are not just behavioral, they're clinical. And I think that, you know, like trying to be able to give that perspective in general would also help increase empathy for the profession and understanding of the profession, because that's really what kind of holds back the profession a lot, which we've talked a lot about that. But, you know, not actually having any experience, but then actually being able to look and see exactly what we did, that's very powerful versus just getting a verbal report.
You know, there's also not that much research on the use of body cameras and EMS. I know that there's a district in Texas along with Cypress Creek EMS, London EMS, and I think one or two of the other trusts in the UK have body cameras now. There's just not a lot of research. The research that does exist show, they did a research study that looked at how well paramedics were able to remember the care they had given in a simulated setting. And they found out that having the ability to review the video dramatically improved the quality of the charting. But there's just, the problem is I think there's an enormous amount of opportunity here. So the opportunity to have your side of the story better told, the opportunity to, in theory, people behave better when they're on camera. And so, in theory, we'd face less conflict, perhaps less violence. We would actually be able to document more accurately. We might be able to document quicker. We might be able to get more feedback, especially when we do something rare or unusual. And we might be able to actually save, you know, saving 10 minutes. If your call, average call time cycle is an hour, saving 10 minutes is almost a 20% time savings. That is ginormous. That would actually pay for itself a bunch of times over. And especially if there's a way for us to mark either by using artificial intelligence or by actually using some sort of marker, the way we do on the life pack where we mark events, where we could actually mark when things happen. So you could actually just, fast forward. Let's say that patient has a completely different response to the same question from the ER physician as they did from you. But you could be like, doc, look here, and you'd have it already be marked where this question was asked, and you'd be able to actually find it really quickly. Now, I think actually there's a lot of video apps now that also run the audio through AI and produce transcripts out of it automatically. So you could do that. But we're at the point right now where I don't think there's technological barriers. I think the only barrier to doing this is perception and to some degree upfront costs. So perception is a problem because, you know, people don't like being on camera. People don't like being filmed. It's very weird to me that I have a little magnetic camera. It looks like one of those old little tiny square Walkmans. It has a magnet. It goes on your chest, and you press it in and it will take a picture. And I wore it to a conference once, and you'd be shocked how many people got super uncomfortable about that. Now, you're in a conference center, so there's literally cameras everywhere. But for some reason, the fact that I had a camera like on my shirt, you know, the magnet, that freaked people out. So I think that people are still not completely used to the idea of cameras everywhere, although we all have a camera in our hands almost 24 hours a day, basically these days. But we don't actually pay attention to those. I don't know why, it's no different. But if you were to wear an audio recorder around all day, and you let people know it, I think they'd be very uncomfortable. Even though literally they're being From you pulling onto the campus where you work, to pulling into the parking deck where you work, to walking in the front door where you work, to walking into your offices where you work, you're on camera at all those steps. And somehow you're uncomfortable with someone else wearing and walking around carrying a camera. It's just a cultural problem. And I think that maybe the 20-year-olds would not be as freaked out by it as the 50-year-olds are. But, you know, we talked about this before, you know, people who have the misguided belief that there's some kind of tracker in the COVID vaccine are still walking around carrying their cell phone, which is literally tracking them all the time. So I think it's a matter of perception, people getting used to it. But I think we're seeing from the Chavin trial that cameras are going to be part of the way care is assessed and the way care is retrospectively reviewed. I'm not sure if they used cameras in that Toronto case where the kid was shot in the abdomen with a small caliber bullet. The medics were told he was shot with a BB gun, both by the cops and by bystanders. And the kid ended up later dying, and they're on criminal trial right now. The jury's out right now. They're on criminal trial for listening to what other people said and taking him to the hospital that they were directed to take the patient to. But I think that, I'm not sure if they had, I didn't see the trial for that. It's with the newspaper reports, but it's going to help us most of the time. And I think it's actually useful for everybody. And I think that the benefits outweigh the drawbacks. Although, like many things, I've come to the belief that unless paramedics and EMTs start being jerky about things and saying we're not going to do anything more without getting a raise, if you're going to increase our responsibilities, we want to raise every single time. That's the only way we're going to make up that gap. Because we, you know, I've been around a while, and what we did 30 years ago and what we're responsible for now are two very different things. And the pay rate for that increased responsibility has not kept up. And almost every other discipline you look at, when you give them more responsibility, you have to give them more money.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that, all those sentiments and facts.
You can't agree with everything. You have to be the naysayer. What's the drawback to all this?
I actually, you know, the one that stood out the most, there's a few. I mean, there's not, in my opinion, there's not as many drawbacks as there are the, you know, positives. But one of the ones that stood out to me the most was having to deal with the patients. Like, will a patient be as honest with me about how much they've taken of a drug or whether or not they were, you know, sexually assaulted or what the facts were regarding their domestic violence situation if they know that they're on camera? I'm not sure if they would be. I'm not, you know, I think it would really depend on the patient, but there is a possibility that people would hold back on, you know, being forthcoming in, about their medical situations or their social situations when they're on camera.
That's true. I mean, I think it's a real problem, except that's been addressed in at least in New Jersey and other states as well. Law enforcement can arrest you for calling 911 for a medical emergency related to drug use. So they cannot arrest you for those drugs. It's against the law for them to do so. So I think we might have to have spend some more time on assurances for people. That what you tell me is completely confidential and guarded by a bunch of, you know, federal regulations and state regulations regarding privacy. But I think that those things, I think sufficient safeguards actually already exist now, but we might have to spend some time explaining them.
I would agree with that. I also think that, you know, it all, again, goes back to the visual and the perception of things regarding like the cameras, right? So We're on camera all the time. I don't necessarily see a camera when I'm on camera all those times, but I have kind of like a subconscious understanding that I'm being recorded like most times that I walk through a public place.
Sure.
it, I feel probably a little more on edge when someone takes out a camera and starts recording me than I do if, you know, I'm walking past a camera somewhere and I don't know how much of it is being recorded, you know?
One is an overt action and one is just a background in the background.
Exactly. So I think it's really more the overtness that rather than, well, you're being recorded all the time, so why is this different? And I think that the same goes for, you know, what we've experienced with PPE. There was a time when we didn't wear gloves and that was, you know, preposterous because we don't want to offend patients. And now, you know, I would never think about not putting on gloves. And I think we're getting to that point with masks. I knew people were sick. We knew what bloodborne and airborne pathogens were, you know, all this time. It wasn't like I wasn't aware that when people coughed in the air, it was aerosolizing and I was going to get sick if I was close enough and exposed long enough to common colds and all of even the more benign things. But I would now never think about not putting on a mask if someone was coughing in my ambulance, because I'd be like, this is disgusting. Why would I not have a mask on? But previously I'd be like, oh, like, you know, they just have a cold, you know, I'm not going to jump to conclusions, you know, and I would just treat the patient, not be right in their direct line of coughing, but I wouldn't put on a mask just to put on a mask, right? So it's, I think it kind of, it's a good parallel to kind of think of what we, the strides in a way that we've made with PPE and wearing the masks. And we've seen, you know, the flu season was so much more mild this year. And, you know, it was doing something as a level of protection. And I think that a lot of that is perception. Now that we've all been wearing these masks, it's not as weird if I pop on a mask when someone's coughed in the back of the ambulance. If everyone was used to these cameras being a little more, you know, covert or overt rather, right? And it's, you know, on someone's clothing all the time. And every time that you saw an ambulance worker, you saw one, just like you might see one on a cop. It becomes more normal.
So do you think it's, you think for police officers who work for departments that have body cameras that it's become background for them now, that it's just the norm?
I mean, I think it kind of depends. Like there's definitely a personality difference in how that plays in your perception. Like, you know, you and I are educators, we're both performers, we're both, you know, we are, you know, introverted extroverts, at least, if not just extroverts.
No, so I'm just extrovert. You might be introvert extrovert. I'm just extrovert.
So it's, you know, we're cool at being in the spotlight or whatever, and that doesn't freak us out entirely. Whereas some people are so camera shy, I don't know if they'd ever feel comfortable with that. You know, so I think some of the personality comes into play too.
What's the point of flipping off the tops of the PrestaJets like Roy and Johnny if you can't do it in public, right? In a whole setting.
That's true.
And plus, well, I worked most of my career in lower Manhattan, so I'm used to a crowd, right? So I'm used to performing. Ambulance work as performance art.
Yeah, to a degree, right? You have to expect to be watched. You know, especially the more urban setting that you work in, you know, there's just going to be more people around. And now there's more people with cameras around. So
there's more people with cameras around filming you, but without you filming the entire event as well. And what I think is funny, though, is when you look at your private vehicles, when you look at your house. So I have a pretty average apartment and I have two motion activated cameras. An infrared, a door, motion activated door sensor. And I have Amazon, what's it called? Alexa on two of my devices. So literally, even at home, everything I say is being recorded by Alexa. I understand that. The cameras are taking video of me all the time and it just writes over so no one cares. But honestly, like it is that pervasive. It's in your car, it's in your house, it's in your workplace already, it's on the streets, and that's all the passive cameras. That's without anybody actually holding up a, you know, their phone to shoot camera, shoot live video. When you start thinking about how pervasive it is, and how many ways you're being tracked at all times, I think that it's a smart defensive strategy.
The second you do anything, the second you leave a restaurant, how is the restaurant? The second you left somewhere you shopped, how was your shopping experience? You know,
yeah.
And that's bad enough. But I mean, more and more lately, you know, I understood when I Googled something you know, looking up, you know, maybe something for education or something about my car, getting ads for it. Okay, like, you know, it's a search engine. It's going to log the things I'm searching for. But more and more now, it's like I ask someone something or someone asks me something and the phone is out and now it's giving me ads. I find that to be a little creepier than when I search something and I know I'm putting it on the internet, you know, because again, I know that the phones are recording, but because it's just sitting there and I'm so used to the phone being just an extension of like my daily life, I'm not considering the fact that it's recording information that's just audio, which is weird.
The interesting part is that, okay, you can opt out of all that, right? On your phone. You can opt out of most of it. Let's put it that way. The problem is, do you want to get less relevant ads for shit you're not going to buy? Or would you rather at least see relevant ads for things you're considering buying? I got actually really mad the other day because I had looked up this jacket. Actually, I was looking for something else on Amazon. And I looked at this jacket. I said, I want to buy this jacket. So I copied the URL for the jacket. I emailed it to myself. And I got home and like a day later, I bought the jacket. Now, this is where I got aggravated. For the next week, I still saw ads for identical jackets all throughout my Facebook feed and stuff like that. And I got mad because like, if they know I was interested in the jacket, they should also know I bought the jacket and should stop advertising that stuff to me. But
yeah, I would agree with that. And I would agree with like, I think I actually get some entertainment value out of it. And now I don't know, I wouldn't know what I was missing until I was missing it. Like, for example, I was using online apps, you know, when I was dating over the last couple of years. And then I met someone and I'd be like, no more ads for this. And they're like, interested in women? You know, like, like whatever algorithm like, that is.
Maybe you were going to try something new. Maybe you're stopping using this app. We've got an app for you. Don't want to date farmers anymore? We've got something else for you. No problem.
Yeah. And then like, yeah, it's just, it made me think of Pandora, like when Pandora first came out and you were like, I don't like this song. And they're like, we're so sorry. We're going to work on it. You know, like it's like the, my little personal robot, like trying to make my life better, you know?
And that's what it's doing. It's trying to, the whole point of all that surveillance, at least now, is to sell you stuff. And if they're not selling you stuff, they're not being successful. So where do you go to work and you mention something that you want to buy at work and then it pops up in your feed? I mean, because you're being, I mean, one of the things I find very interesting is the, there's companies, you know how they have in the police cars, the things that just read the license plate readers and constantly scan them. There's private companies that do this as well. And so one of the things that I always thought would be a great business for an ambulance company, I had this theory that I want to have an ambulance company that being an ambulance company is sort of the side business of it. But the real business of it is going to be like advertising on the outside, LED advertising and monetizing the fact that you're driving around healthcare institutions all day long. So I want to have those license plate readers so that in any hospital, I can capture all those license plate readers and they could sell the value of them, so they'll know who's going to this hospital, who's not. I want to have advertising, so I'm at hospital A, the ambulance will advertise hospital B. When I'm at hospital A, and vice versa, whatever the hell that ends up being. But there's lots of ways to, you know, the more I think about the ambulance business, the non-emergency ambulance business in particular, the more I think about ways to monetize the hell out of it, because it's a vehicle driving around healthcare institutions all day long.
You're an entrepreneur. What can you say?
Yeah, there was in California, I want to say, and then also somewhere else in the world, there was a companies that were putting advertising on the side of ambulances. I would put advertising both on the outside and on the inside because there's a captive audience on the inside of the ambulance. And you'll see it a lot of places like Hatsola and other volunteer organizations will put donated by blah, blah, blah. But having advertising on the ambulance, the big vehicle that drives around all day, and it's highly visible when it's going to an assignment, it's got lights on, it's attracting the eye. So, you know, having a big Bayer aspirin advert on the side of it makes perfect sense from a Bayer aspirin perspective. There's companies that will pay you to drive around cars, you know, that they wrap. This is no different. Lots of opportunities. So maybe there's some other ways we can monetize all this recording of all this ambulance stuff and make it even more useful. I mean, it might put the EPCR companies out of business if we set up an audio-based charting model, but there might be other ways to do it. There's a lot of metadata there.
True. Yeah, it's true.
All right. That's our thoughts. I really feel like there's a lot of opportunity here to do more research, a lot of opportunity to actually come up with innovative models that sort of do good for everybody. And I'm just wondering who's going to be the first to really do it. Well, what we see now is we see in Texas, they've done it just to be out in front and for clinical quality assurance. In the UK, they're doing it mostly because their medics are getting their butts kicked and they don't carry any weapons and they want it to be a deterrent, and putting the signs on the side of the bus and PSAs hasn't worked. I'm just wondering who's going to make it into an actual real big business. And when somebody thinks about that, I'm happy to be your partner in all this because I think it's a great idea. And, you know, Maria is always telling me we need to make our $1 million in EMS, and this might be our way.
Scott and I have an array of business plans that we have come up with after our times together in the command center of the pandemic. Yes.
Most of them completely useless and farcical, but some of them actually,
only of value to us.
Yeah, in our demented way of thinking. But some of them actually have real value. And so let us know what you think. And then we will talk to you again in hopefully a few weeks. Have a great day. Bye, everybody.